At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
My friends, I am Vivian McPeak, and this is HempResent. If you have feedback or would like to suggest a guest or topic for HempResent, email me at hempresent@gmail.com. Nathan Marsh started his journey into cannabis activism in 1993 after his father lost his life in a drunk driving accident. He was passionate that access to cannabis is a civil right and that society should be able to benefit from its positive impacts on both the mind and the body. Living in Denver, Colorado at the time, he committed to doing anything he could to spread the word about the benefits of cannabis and promote legalization and decriminalization. Nathan later moved to Oregon and Washington and was involved in several nonprofits dedicated to cannabis activism. In 2015, when Oregon legalized cannabis, he produced the Oregon Hemp Fest, one of the first to license with the Seattle Hemp Fest, and became the only licensed hemp fest in Oregon. That same year, he started the Oregon Growers Cup, a cannabis cup that's grown to be Oregon's largest and oldest cannabis competition. Today, Nathan also produces cannabis cups in Arizona, Missouri, and New York. I've invited him to join me today to learn more. Welcome, Nathan, to HempResent on Cannabis Radio.
How's it going? Great to be here.
So far, so good, man. Yeah. Good to talk to you again. You became motivated to change the cannabis laws after the tragic death of your father, and my condolences on that loss. What were the first steps that you took to get involved in the movement? How did you start your activism?
You know, it's kind of funny. I was a teenager, and a big part that wasn't really said there is that cannabis really helped me overcome all those emotions of being 16 and losing your dad to alcoholism and drunk driving. And for me, it was just, I knew that, cannabis helped me through this. It made me be a better person. I saw the effects that it had on my mental health and as well as, diving into music. And, I was living in a predominantly, poor, I was the minority in my neighborhood, but very, very low economy and a lot of crime. And there's a part of Denver when the Bloods and the Crips and all that stuff was happening. And the first big thing I did is I just sewed a patch of a cannabis leaf on my backpack. And it was illegal at that time. And to me, it was kind of the first act of, I'm going to show people that I don't care. They can arrest me for having it or do what they want to do. And of course, they had bigger things to deal with. But that, and then just, in high school trying to, I don't think I was very organized at having any real slick activism project at that point. It was just kind of more of, me trying to push the facts that I believe this was civil right that we were really being denied and had negative effects on people not having access to it.
You're making a statement, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
There are a lot of ways to do activism. Why and when did you decide to produce a cannabis reform event in your state of Oregon?
Yeah. So, going back, as I'm 47 now, and, that was years when I was 16, it was a long time ago. And going from Denver and moving, I lived in Montana and Chicago for a little bit and Seattle. And the next kind of big jump for me was actually at the Seattle Hemp Fest in my 20s and when I was living in Seattle. And that protestable really kind of, I think in my mind, the Hemp Fest was the first, visual thing that I could understand that we could all do together to try to do something. At that point, I wasn't really looking at nonprofits, but it was one of those things that I could do my part as a cannabis enthusiast and to go and celebrate the protestable that was Hemp Fest. And that really was a big impact on me. And then when I ended up moving to Oregon, I was running a call center. I was the operations manager for the Nintendo's customer support division. So I was going up to Seattle and I was coming back and I still wanted to do something. And that's when I, you know, was kind of older and a little more wiser and said, well, hey, look, you know, the best way to do this is through political action. And at that point, you know, John Sajo was a friend of mine and, you know, seeing what he had did to kind of get medical marijuana for Oregon in 98. And then just see, or I'm sorry, it was 89. Yeah, sorry. But seeing how the differences of getting the medical program going and everything that he had done. And, you know, of course, I was the young buck coming in. And that's when we started the Umpqua Cannabis Association, which was a nonprofit for local growers around here that were mostly at that point all, well, they all were medical grows at that point before 2015. And then when it got legal, and I wasn't necessarily a grower, I was just kind of a, you know, a guy that had some money and some time that wanted to push for this activism. And then it became clear that, you know, I had the skill set to do a lot of the things that needed to be done to help the nonprofit, like web design, and then also getting starting to do events. And that's when I said, you know, hey, I want to do the Oregon Hemp Fest and give a percentage, you know, of the proceeds to the nonprofit. Signed up with you guys to get a percentage of the proceeds to you guys to support the Seattle Hemp Fest mission. And then in 2015, that was kind of our first year, you know, it just got legal. And then we also at the same time said, well, hey, let's do a cannabis cup. And then it got quickly realized that when it was me saying, hey, let's us do it, it ended up being me. And so as you know, how that can kind of go sometimes. But you know, and unfortunately, you know, the nonprofit kind of fizzled out mainly because, you know, that was all trying to represent the local growers here. And then when our county opted out for the medical growers to be part of the legal, rec market that was, you know, becoming in dispensaries and all that, it just quickly became clear that, you know, Oregon had decided to kind of, you know, really, attack the medical program and really try to put it in decline. And they put a lot of obstacles in the way for people like John, who had paved the way to actually, you know, progress and move into this new market. So a lot of bitter kind of rose, man. Every rose has its thorn.
Right. I just want to say how much I respect and love our mutual friend, John Sajo, and work that he has done, man, in the movement in Oregon and beyond. I've been trying to get John on the show for a long time, and I don't know why. I think he's too humble, or I'm not sure what it is, but he's kind of been resistant. I've managed to drag just about everybody else onto it. And you know, as far as Seattle Hemp Fest, it certainly, you know, changed my life. I mean, I kind of probably will define my life in the end. And you know, I really hope that our biggest legacy is not, you know, legalization in Washington State and beyond. I really hope it is that a lot of people came and said, "Wow, you can do this," you know.
Right.
You can create something like this to speak out for against injustice or for the cause you believe in, and you can actually make it fun and exciting and entertaining as well, right?
Yeah.
And so I feel, you know, so blessed actually to, you know, have had a bit of, you know, just by the whole entire thing, man. And you know, it's brought me in contact with some of the greatest people I've ever met, including people like you. You know, it's just such a blessing. That's been the biggest reward for me, is the amazing relationships, you know, and opportunity to meet people, both fellow activists and community organizers, but also, you know, a lot of my heroes I've been able to meet. And that's the cool thing that you can, that's the reward that activism gives you, is the community that you belong to. You meet people that share your ideals and passion and values. And man, I think that's one of the best things in life. Have you found that?
I agree. I really do. And to me, you know, it's so much of it has been about community. And I, you know, as you know, being the person running the Hemp Fest and the event, it's a whole different event for you, you know, versus people that just get to go.
You've never attended. I don't know what it's like.
Right. And you know, going and me being an attendee at the Hemp Fest in Seattle a bunch of years, and then also being throwing one, you know, I guess I just always go back to that feeling of community that when you're there as just somebody, you feel like all these, these daggers that have been thrown at us to put us in different boxes and to get us to not like each other and to not agree with each other or think that we're stupid because you support this or whatever, all that just melts away over our love for the plant and just seeing the community that comes together. I mean, that was so
And
powerful.
how
So.
beautiful and non-threatening
Right.
and gentle the cannabis community really is. I mean,
Oh,
that's
yeah.
one of the things that they prove. You know, and the cops saw it. The cops at Sail
Yeah.
Hemp Fest year after year, and they're like, God damn, I'm supposed to dislike these people, but you know, they're actually not a problem, you know.
No. Yeah,
Or
we've overspent on security every single event
and that's
because we've never had a problem.
And if you're
Yeah.
not overspending on security, you've got something going wrong, right?
Right, right,
I felt the
right.
same way about, you know, we spend all this money on first aid and ambulances and stuff. And in a perfect world, it was a waste of money. You know,
Right.
things go right, but you got to have it there. I got to go to a
Yeah.
quick break. We're going to come back and we're going to find out all about the Oregon Hemp Fest with Nathan Marsh.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back with Nathan Marsh of the Oregon Hemp Fest and more. Nathan, tell us about the Oregon Hemp Fest. If somebody was going to attend it this year, what would they see and hear?
So the really cool thing about, doing it in Oregon is that we were able to kind of take the model of the Hemp Fest in Seattle and then, do some things that you guys weren't able to do at the park. And so it's there's camping, it's on a big ranch, these beautiful, really ancient site actually with Little Creek that they found competition Indian arrowheads. So even Indians way back gathered there. But we have camping, night events. We have a 32-foot dome. We have a big vendor village, and everybody kind of comes and listens to music on the main stage. We also have an open mic and a talent show where people can sign up to do their little section of art and show us, their talent. And then, of course, we have a lot of different informational and educational vendors and booths and some speakers and giveaways. 420, we always give away a bunch of stuff. And actually, we found the best way to get people to listen to activists is to throw out those 10-cent dab containers right before to the crowd. It gets everybody there to listen.
Yeah, it brings them in front of the stage.
Yep, exactly. And then so yeah, then the DJ show at night, and then there's even a burlesque show at the end of the night as well. And so one thing too is like during the day it's all ages, and then after for the night event and for camping you have to be 21. So that's kind of how we make sure that we don't have any teens getting pre-access, that kind of thing. But we
That's
also
a
want,
real smart way to break it down, man.
and it's been, it's been a challenge for us because we want to be able to support people that have children that need cannabis. I mean, there's definitely, kids under 21 that have medical conditions that need a form of it or RSO or those kind of things. And so we don't want to ever exclude, those patients and their access, but same time for the night and camping and all that stuff, it needs to be the 21 and over.
Yeah, you know, we in before Hemp Fest, well, in the early days of Hemp Fest, we produced the same essential group of people produced. Well, we worked three different 3-day camping events, festivals, and then we threw our own Starlight Mountain Festival and several others. And the real
Yeah.
magic happens at night, you know,
It
when
really does.
if you're going to be somewhere for 3 days, right, and you pitch up your tent, I mean, you can let your hair down. And at nighttime, everybody, that's when the real camaraderie happens, and the day attendees are gone, and man, it's just that's when the stars are out, and that's when the beautiful stuff. Some I don't want to limit it to that, of course. Beautiful stuff happens in the daytime, but it's also kind of when the hanky stuff is more possible when it's dark and you can't see everything, and people are in.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good.
Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Vibing, you know, alcohol or what have you.
Sure.
And, you know, I know at Seattle Hemp Fest, which was in just the heart of this giant city, you know, we wouldn't have wanted to do a nighttime event. In fact, we had to have a 24 presence on site for 10 days so that we could secure the event at night as it was.
Wow.
Because, you know, we would have people, you know,
trying to get there and do,
well, yeah, jump the fence. You know, people would wrap up their booth with their wares inside. Right.
Right.
And, and we just had, yeah, it was just challenging. Just this week, since the last time that we spoke, it was announced that the DEA intends to deschedule cannabis down from Schedule 1 to Schedule 3. While cannabis shouldn't be Schedule 1, it should be Schedule None. What do you think about this development? The biggest crack on the wall of federal prohibition in 50 years. I mean, I've seen mixed reactions. I've seen mixed reactions from reformers, you know?
Yeah.
And it's kind of a glass half empty, half full or something. I mean, what would your take on it be?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very nuanced thing, and I think there's some unknowns. We don't know how it's going to
play
out on some levels.
That's right.
No, exactly. And so I guess I'm hesitant to say one way or the other which way it may go. I mean, I think the overall thing for me is that, you know, the more that we decriminalize this and reclassify it down, that's a movement in the right direction. You know, and Oregon is an interesting one because when you know, the dispensaries and the medical program was kind of getting, you know, squeezed out. And a lot of, again, John Sajo and all the, my friends and a lot of the people in the medical community were kind of up in arms about how the negative impact of to patients, you know, and the whole system that was there for patients that was set up before. And then an interesting thing kind of happened. And I look around and I say, you know what, I can grow four. You know, I didn't even grow before when I was a medical grower, but once it became legal to just grow recreationally, I grew my four. Then I got my med card and I can grow 10. And I had just pounds of weed that I was just giving to people. And around here in Oregon, where everybody can grow four, there's such an abundance that I saw patients actually having more access. It was just in different ways. So, and there's also people that don't know people that grow weed or don't know people that can get them in the medical program that now can go into a dispensary. So there's a lot of these things that we want to make black and white. But at the end of the day, I mean, for me, I think I, you know, my whole end goal is cannabis for the world. And I want, you know, cannabis to have an impact on our whole, you know, the earth and US, the US and a lot of countries are waiting for the United States to drop it, and then they'll follow suit. And so I think eventually, if we can get there, and you know, Biden probably is doing this to try to get some more votes as well. Who knows from the political standpoint?
But it was also a campaign promise, somewhat.
Right. Yeah, it was.
But yeah, the timing of it. I mean, of course, you know, he's not stupid. This is, you know, he needs help with the youth.
Right. Yes, I agree.
It's also the right thing to do, though. And you know, I can't be in his mind. He was a big part of the prohibitionist, you know, the 80s. But I see it as like, this is the crack, the biggest thing that's happened since it was scheduled. And to me, this could very well, this is, you know, it's Schedule 3. It's only 3 away now from not being on the schedule at all. I'm reversing that, but I think it goes to 5 or something, but my point is now a lot of things are going to be different potentially. And I just think that this is a giant step, and that I've seen people just kind of dismissing it and complaining.
Yeah.
And I'm like, man, I think we should be, you know, thankful for the opportunities that this creates to just drive a nail through prohibition.
I think the counterpart that I would, my personal belief and the things that I'm going to be trying to push for is to keep the balance between big corporate farm getting into this and there still being a community and a small grow base, you know, and like doing events in Oregon and then Arizona, for example, where, you know, the licenses were millions of dollars, and there's, you know, most of it is all money people. Now they do employ people that are part of the culture and part of the community. So there's that. But at the end of the day, it's a slippery slope. And, you know, are you getting salts or organic and all these different things? So
Yeah, it's
that's
complicated.
what, yeah, that's where I would be worried, is that, is this, you know, how is this going to impact the ability for small growers and small companies, and even large cannabis companies that are just, you know, maybe run by a family or something. I mean, it doesn't have to be a small business, but
Yeah.
yeah.
My biggest fear for a long time was Schedule II, so I'm actually overjoyed to see Schedule III, which I think is, you
Better.
know, a less of a gift to the pharmaceutical
Good.
entities. And
Okay.
yeah, I mean, I agree on the threat. I mean, this model of legalization is not what we were originally fighting for all over the country,
No.
and it's just
Right.
wiping out legacy farmers that have been there for 50, 30, 20 years. It's just wiping them
Right.
out left and right because they can't keep with this kind of corporate carpetbagger,
Right.
you
Race
know,
to the
large
bottom.
scale. It's not the quality, it's the quantity you can produce, you know. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Kind of like the same old thing, right? That we've seen in the corporate world, where
Yeah.
they just come in and dominate. And what they'll do is they'll let small farmers create a great brand and do all the work and the R&D and the investment, and they'll
Right.
just come in and buy them out.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, and there's kind of a joke that we've had too, that we say is, if you want to start with or make a small fortune in the cannabis industry, you start with a big one.
Yeah, yes.
And so on the counter, the devil's advocate to a lot of this is, I've seen a lot of these corporate entities fall on their face and not do well at all, because they
Yeah.
don't understand the culture. They don't understand. Oregon is really tough with branding anyway. We're kind of anti branding and marketing almost.
Right, right.
But yeah, but seeing, you know, seeing how these guys go about it. And then one big thing too that's hard for normal guys in Oregon that I work with,
Quickly, because I
is
got to go to
that,
break.
okay,
But
real
you
quick,
finish.
is yeah, is that these big companies will come in, not do well, then they'll do a fire sale, and then they're selling their stuff at, you know, at a loss. And of course the dispensary is going to buy that
Because they can
instead
do
of
that,
the,
right? They can
right.
survive that.
Yeah.
We're going to go to break, come back with our last segment for Nathan Marsh.
Time to roll out for the people that let us hemp present. Hang loose. We're coming right back.
We're back for the third segment with Nathan Marsh. Nathan, you know, we talked about the Oregon Hemp Fest. You produce cannabis cups in several states. What is a cannabis cup? And can you talk about the difference between the cannabis laws and the cannabis scenes in the various places that you have these weed events?
Yeah, so in Oregon, you know, back in 2015, the idea for us was that we wanted to do a legit cup that sponsors didn't get to buy the trophies, and the judges were people like John Sajo. He ended up being kind of our first master judge, and is still a master judge for the cup today in Oregon. And the system that we set up, that we've kind of massaged over the years, is really critical in the aspect of blind judging. They don't see the strain or the farm name. They just know the category. And then they're judging it on smoke, sorry, taste, look, smell, and high. And each of those get 5 points. And then it's kind of an average of the judges' opinions for the total score. And so our kind of formula and really making sure that we did a cup the right way and just kept improving the model has kind of kept us at the forefront of Oregon's market. And people, you know, even humbled me by saying, you know, we're just under Emerald Cup kind of thing in the nation. And it's been, you know, this will be our 10th year this year. But we kind of said, you know, hey, what if we take this proven model, and we know how to do this, and we know the right judges and how to make this process work, and let's put it in different states. And we did Arizona this March, our first year there. And then we've been doing Kansas City. This will be our second year in Kansas City. And then we're looking to do New York in July as a live stream. So we won't have an actual big event there. And then, you know, as far as it's been kind of crazy. Every state is different, is I guess the best way I would say it. You know, Kansas City was very interesting. You know, they kind of did a thing where, you know, like for example, one of the companies that we worked with over there, we found out that they had all of the five dispensaries that were allowed in North Kansas City. And the guy had actually, you know, was a government. He was a lawyer, but he had worked with the government to even kind of flesh out the plan for the whole thing. So I think there's a lot of these states that are saying, hey, there's money to be made here. Let's get our buddies involved potentially. And then they kind of get greenlit. And we even seen some of that in Oregon with LaModa, and because you know they had somebody, or one of the founders of their company was on the Rules Advisory Committee, and then they found, you know, they are actually had all kinds of drama where they got caught doing a bunch of bad stuff here in Oregon. So I think all of these states kind of have this, the sharks come when there's chum in the water kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I think it's always kind of a battle between trying to represent the culture and the real higher aspects of what cannabis is here for, not just to make money and deliver a bad product. So,
And how can you have a vibrant functioning industry when you're confined to state lines? I mean, is there another model? I can't think of another model in the entire country where you can't sell your stuff across the state.
Well, and that even worries me, because if we do actually allow federal legalization, the first thing they're going to do is put a federal tax on top of everything else.
Yeah.
And right now the taxes in Oregon are so extreme that the black market's kind of coming back, because it's just like, it's, you know, so
same here.
They can't have their cake and eat it too, I guess. And if you really want to make it, you know, equitable, then they got to do it with a little bit more insight and not just let lobbyists decide how stuff's set up. New York's interesting.
I always characterize this as legalization on the prohibitionist terms. They want to reap money, but they also want to suppress the cannabis culture at the same time.
Right.
But I'm sorry, finish your thought, man, and then we'll have to wrap
up. Yeah. My last thought is, I was just going to say, New York's interesting. I need to, obviously we're getting more involved in seeing, but they've done some very drastic things to try to make it less corporate-ish, I guess. But at the same time, there's only certain people that kind of have that money that can play that game. So it's kind of this weird tug and pull. Like, they gave the first licenses to hemp farmers there, which was very interesting. And then of course you've got the indoor, the cost of indoor in New York is probably going to be, you know, quite a bit, unless you're doing it upstate and all these other areas. But
right,
it's just interesting to see the cost difference too, of how cheap it is in one state versus the other. So,
Nathan, very quickly, how can people check out Oregon Hemp Fest and contact you?
Yeah. So OregonHempFest.org is our website. And then the Oregon Growers Cup, the Arizona Growers Cup, Missouri Growers Cup, and then New York Canna Cup. And all of those are on Instagram as well. But yeah, take a look at the website or Instagram, and usually you can get any info. And of course you can DM us and we'll be happy to hit you up.
All right, Nathan Marsh from Oregon Hemp Fest. Thank you so much for being on the show, my brother.
Thank you, man. I appreciate you, man, for all the stuff you've done. You're definitely a hero in my eyes. So.
Thanks,
thank
man.
You. Thanks, man.
That concludes this installment, Hemp Presenting Cannabis Radio. When it comes to prohibition, you've got your right not to remain silent. Activism requires a voice. So find your voice and speak up for justice, because resistance is fertile. The Hemp Present intro music is 7 Mile Beach by Joanne Rand, and the outro music is Take Back the Plant by Stickerbush. See you next time. Stay strong. Marijuana!
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.